Isaac and Rebekah had married and spent 20 years with her barren, unable to bear children. When Isaac prayed to the Lord, and God blessed her to conceive. And in Genesis 25, 22, but the children struggled together within her, and she said, if it is so, why then am I this way? So she went to inquire of the Lord. The Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples will be separated from your body. And one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. So when Isaac prayed, Rebekah was blessed with twins, but they were fighting it in the womb, and she found out she had the twins, and that there was going to be two nations, two peoples that were descended from her, and that the older one would serve the younger. That's God's statement. That's God's determination. That will be so. Now, the first came forth red in verse 25, all over like a hairy garment, and they named him Esau. Afterward, his brother came forth with his hand holding on to Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Jacob means like somebody who grabs things for himself. He was the grabber. He had grabbed on to Esau's heel. But he was the one who came out second. So the older Esau will serve the younger Jacob. Now in verse 27, when the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a peaceful man living in tents. Now Isaac loved Esau because he had a taste for game. But Rebekah loved Jacob. When Jacob had cooked stew, Esau came in from the field and he was famished. And Esau said to Jacob, please let me have a swallow of that red stuff there, for I'm famished. Therefore his name was called Edom. But Jacob said, first sell your birthright. Esau said, behold, I'm about to die, so of what use then is the birthright to me? And Jacob said, first swear to me. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank. And rose and went on his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. We know that story pretty well, probably, but I'd like you to think for a moment as we begin this lesson about what you see in Esau and in Jacob from this story. Esau, he must have been really hungry. And that red stuff must have been really good smelling because he sold his birthright. Do you understand the birthright? In their custom, the oldest son would receive the double portion of the inheritance. So with two sons, he would get two-thirds. Jacob would get one-third. Now, Jacob says, sell me your birthright. I've never been sure if he, from that, was just going to trade places. Now, Jacob gets the two-thirds, and Esau the one-third. Well, he sells everything, and that means Jacob will get it all, and Esau gets nothing. Either way, even a third of Isaac's estate, if you read Genesis 26, he was a wealthy man. That was a huge amount of money to spend for that stew. What was he thinking? No one meal is worth that. But he recklessly chose what he wanted and felt at the moment. He casually discarded something that was worth a whole lot more in the future to satisfy what he wanted and felt right then. As someone has said, he sacrificed the future on the altar of the immediate. Do we see ourselves in that? It is so easy for us to think about what we feel right now, what I want, my objectives today, tomorrow, in this life, and lose my inheritance in doing that. The New Testament picks up on the Esau story in Hebrews chapter 12. In Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 16, we're warned that there be no immoral or godless person like Esau, who sold his own birthright for a single meal. Now, he's warning us about the danger of us selling our inheritance for things that are immediate. And it's interesting, about six verses later in Hebrews 12:23, we are called the church of the firstborn ones. As Esau, we are the firstborn. We are the one to get the prime inheritance with God in heaven. And we, as Esau, can prioritize the immediate and lose the inheritance. I'm afraid we do that a lot. We are so focused on this life, material possessions, status, acceptance, fun and games, sports, school, career, family. And it's so easy for us not to deny ourselves and not to sacrifice ourselves and not to give ourselves to the Lord because our goals are so much focused on the immediate, on the here and now. That is a danger for us. The Bible warns constantly about the danger of the world around us, about attachment to this life and to the people around us, warns about the dangers of riches. It's easier to thread a camel through a needle's eye than for a wealthy person to get to heaven. And you look at us. By almost any measure you want to measure us by, we are wealthy people. We are the people Jesus was talking about that is extremely difficult for us to give ourselves to God because we're so focused on the things of this life. That is a really serious danger and warning for us. If there's anything we are tempted to be, it's to be Esau. But think about Jacob also. Wow. He was a grabber, wasn't he? He exploited his brother's weakness. He was cold and calculating and conniving. Not only did he bargain with him, you've got to sell me your birthright before I'll give you that food, he made him swear it. He wants to be sure there's no reneging on it later. But the thing that's amazing is God had already promised the older will serve the younger. He didn't seem to be able to wait for God's promise. He had to aid it with his own scheme. And so he connives his way into what God had promised to bless him with anyway. That was very much Jacob's character. In chapter 27, Isaac calls Esau in to give him his deathbed blessing. Turns out Isaac lived a lot longer than he thought he was going to. It's common for a father to give a blessing to his children before he dies, but not normally his child when he has more than one. But he favored Esau. He intended no blessing for Jacob. Rebekah gets wind of it. She always seems to hear things. If you don't want her to know, don't say it. But she tells Jacob, come here, I've got an idea. And she says, we're going to pass you off as your older brother. And he says, it won't work. I'll be discovered. Not a good argument. When something's wrong, we need to say it's wrong, not just say it won't work. Because when we say it won't work, Satan will always figure out a way to convince us it will. And Rebekah convinces Jacob. So she dresses him up in Esau's clothes. She wants him to feel like Esau. Esau was a hairy man. So she puts goat skin on his neck and the back of his head. He must have been a really hairy man. And I've always imagined she sprayed him with essence of wilderness or something like that, and she prepared a kid from the flock. And he's just going to sort of go in there, and, you know, Isaac's just going to assume he's Esau because Isaac's old and can't see anymore. Things don't always work out as smoothly as we expect them to. In verse 18 of chapter 27, then he came to his father and said, my father. And he said, here I am. Who are you, my son? He really wasn't supposed to ask that. Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. I've done as you told me. Get up, please. Sit and eat of my game that you may bless me. He seems a little tense about that, don't you think? But time is of the essence. He can't be there when Esau gets back. Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you have it so quickly, my son?" He wasn't supposed to ask that either. And Jacob said, "Because the Lord your God caused it to happen to me." I don't think when he first agreed to Rebekah's deception that he was imagining he was going to tell him an outright lie and then blaspheme the name of God to back it up. Satan always takes us farther than we want to go. And Isaac said to Jacob, verse 21, "Please come close that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son Esau or not." So Jacob came close to Isaac, his father, and he felt him and said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob." He hadn't thought about disguising that. "But the hands are the hands of Esau." He did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands, so he blessed him. And he said, "Are you really my son Esau?" He becomes a lot less verbal now. He said, "I am." And he deceives his father with his brother's clothes and goat skin. He himself later will be deceived by his sons with their brother's clothes and goat's blood. You reap what you sow. Well, when Esau comes in, just after Jacob had left, it's too late. Isaac had already given everything to Jacob. The very stuff God said he would get without any of that scheme. And Isaac is furious. Esau is furious. As soon as Isaac dies, he plans on killing Jacob, and Rebekah finds out about it. She has Jacob sent off to her brother to marry one of his relatives, one of his cousins. And so in chapter 29, he comes to Laban's house, and he works for him for a month, and Laban says in verse 14, chapter 29, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh," and there is more truth than it appears in that statement. He asked Jacob what his wages ought to be. Well, Laban had two daughters, the older one Leah, the younger one Rachel. Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel was beautiful. He said, "I'll work for you for 7 years to marry Rachel." That's a long time to marry one woman. But I think he doesn't have any particular reason to want to go back home anytime soon, and it's his way of showing how much he really loves her. And so he works for 7 years. And then in verse 21, Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife, for my time is completed, that I may go into her." It kind of has to jog Laban's memory, it looks like. So they set up the wedding. And in the evening, verse 23, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to him, and Jacob went into her. And verse 25, it came about in the morning, he'd married the wrong one. Don't you hate it when that happens? You know, Isaac didn't know he was blessing the younger son. Jacob doesn't know he's marrying the older daughter. Again, you reap what you sow. Laban graciously allows him to marry Rachel also and work another 7 years. 14 years for the woman you love is a long time. And they have a lot of rivalry between them because Leah and Rachel each has what the other one wants. God blesses Leah with sons. Rachel is desperate for children. God blesses Rachel with Jacob's attention and love. Leah's desperate for that. Finally gets to the point where one day, Leah's oldest son out in the field finds some mandrakes, apparently a fertility aid. And Rachel begs for them, and Leah says, "Well, if I can have Jacob tonight, you can have the mandrakes." So Rachel has the mandrakes, but Leah gets the children again. God finally, the 11th son, Rachel's. She has told Jacob in verse 12, in chapter 30 and verse 1, give me children or else I die. And ironically, she will when she bears her second, Benjamin. Well, after 14 years, Jacob's ready to quit. He's paid off his debt for Rachel. Gotten Leah to boot. When Laban says, no, I really want you to stay. You're really good with my animals. Name your wages. Laban and Jacob deserve each other. They both are trying to con the other one. Jacob has a plan. He says, I'll tell you what, my wages will be all the spotted and speckled and off-colored sheep and goats and so forth. And Laban says, deal. And Laban takes all the spotted and speckled and off-colored animals that there are and takes them away from the flocks and herds that Jacob will have and gives them to his other sons to take care of in another place. See, both of them thought they were outsmarting the other one. Then Jacob, he takes branches and limbs. You know how the bark is darker than the inside? Well, he sort of notches them to where it's the bark and then the inside, and then the bark and the inside. So they're dark, light, dark, light, dark, light. And he puts these striped branches in front of the females as they're mating, because everybody knows what you look at when you're mating. That's the way the offspring come out, right? You can tell Jacob didn't know a lot about genetics. But the amazing thing, they came out that way. Do you remember God's promise? God had said that the older shall serve the younger. God had promised his special blessings on the younger one. And what Jacob thought he was grabbing by his own strategies and schemes were actually the things God was giving. It wasn't Jacob selling the birthright that gave him the inheritance. It wasn't Jacob's impersonating his brother that gave him the blessing. And it sure wasn't those striped rods that gave him all the animals. I did not see this in real time. I think I later saw it on YouTube, but they tell me about 3 years ago in an ad in Super Bowl. I don't even know what it was advertising, but that there was a young boy, I don't know, 6 or 8 or something, that was pretending to be Darth Vader with his wand zapping things, and his father, he didn't realize this, was behind him with the car remote. And the boy zaps the car, and suddenly it comes on. And it freaked him out. He thought he'd done that with his wand. We're a lot like that. There are so many things that we think we did when the truth is it's the Lord. And we thought it was us. That's really the way Jacob is. He's always got a plan. He's always scheming. He's always trying to do things for himself. When in truth it's the Lord that's doing it. And he doesn't even recognize it. In Genesis chapter 32, Jacob has decided after 20 years of service for Laban, it's time to get away and go home, and he does. But he has apparently no news from Esau in these 20 years. When he last left Esau, he was fuming. You would think after 20 years he'd have calmed down, but you really don't know. Jacob's coming back home. He sends messengers ahead to tell Esau that Jacob's coming. He's got plenty of flocks and herds. He's not going to take any of yours. And the messengers come back and tell Jacob Esau's coming. And he's got, I believe, his 400 men with him. That is very unsettling news for Jacob. The day he has dreaded for the last 20 years is about upon him. He is really frightened. He's got a plan. He's going to give his brother a present. Send it on ahead. You ever given somebody a present to try to kind of, make them happier? Maybe your wife, if you did something wrong, gets flowers or something that way. Well, he decides to send Esau a present, quite a present. Verse 13 of chapter 32. Then he selected from what he had with him a present for his brother Esau. Here's the present. 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. Bet you've never given a present quite like that. What does that show you about him? He is scared to death. And even with that present, he really doesn't know if it'll be enough. He really doesn't know what kind of a temper he's going to find Esau in when he comes with those 400 men to meet Jacob, who is returning. And so that night, the night before he meets Esau, verse 24, Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh. So the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But he said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." He said, "Your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Now that's a very significant incident, even if it's a little bit more difficult to interpret. We know from Hosea that was no mere man. That was the Lord's angel, represented the Lord himself. As he wrestled with Jacob all night, that's exactly what God has been doing with Jacob throughout his life. He's been wrestling with him to try to get Jacob to quit trying to run his own affairs and his own self-will and his own plots and schemes and submit to God. In fact, we all struggle with the Lord to determine who's going to control our lives. And after all this time, Jacob was still wrestling with God, so God, the person of the angel, dislocates Jacob's thigh. In real time, he sent Esau with 400 men. He finally put Jacob in a situation where Jacob had no confidence in his ability to grab things for himself, where he was scared to death. God had to cripple him to do it. But finally, he had Jacob so desperate that maybe in some ways, for the first time in his life, he clings to the Lord and says, "I won't let you go until you bless me." He never seemed to need that other times. He always had a plan. But finally, in desperation, he clings to God. And he went from being a Jacob, somebody who grabs things for himself with his own plan and self-will, to an Israel, someone who's a prince with God, someone who seeks God's blessing. We need to stop wrestling with God and start clinging to Him. But often, we have a plan. We have our own will. We have our own agenda. And God tries to humble us, and God tries to cripple us. But we are determined we're going to do things our way with our plan. Thankfully, finally, Jacob submitted. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, when Paul talked about the thorn in the flesh, he really said the same thing. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 7, because of the surpassing greatness of the revelation, "For this reason, to keep me from exalting myself, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from exalting myself. Concerning this, I implored the Lord three times that it might leave me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather boast about my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Self-sufficiency is a handicap. When we feel like we can handle things ourselves, we don't turn to the Lord and trust and depend on Him. It's only when God breaks us that we receive the victory. It's only when we're crippled that He can heal us. God saw that it was better for Jacob, for Paul, to have that thorn in the flesh. That those things that to Paul were weaknesses, insults, distresses, persecution, and difficulties, when he was weak, that's when he could be strong, because that's when he relied on the Lord and not on himself. God wants us to quit being Jacobs. He wants us to quit grabbing for ourselves, trusting in ourselves, relying on our own plans and self-will, and submit to Him. There's great lessons that we need from Esau and from Jacob. Because sometimes we're a lot like both of them. Can be a lot like Esau. Seeking the immediate and the here and now and losing our inheritance. Can be a lot like Jacob. Grabbing for ourselves, relying on ourselves, our own plan, our own will. Not submitting to God, not seeing our need for God, and not giving the glory to God. The opportunity is available for you this morning. If you've not submitted to God, if you've still been wrestling against Him, will He have to cripple you, to humble you, to get Him, you to serve Him and seek Him? Or are you willing to come to Him this morning? If you need to obey the gospel, we encourage you to come and listen to Him.